Monster Man, bonus episode, Bone. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a bonus episode for Patreon subscribers. If you subscribe to my Patreon at any level, you should be receiving this bonus episode. A while back, I talked about adding more of this type of bonus content, and specifically that I wanted to do some more kind of free-form episodes, having chosen a theme for my bonus episodes, I felt was kind of limiting because, ultimately, quite a lot of the stuff that was within that theme, I didn't necessarily feel a whole lot of inspiration to record a bonus episode about it. So I've just started pulling random books off my bookshelf and talking about the monsters in them. And actually today, I'm going to talk about something that's not even a gaming product at all, but actually one of my favorite comics, Bone by Jeff Smith. Now, I don't know if you've read Bone, but if you haven't, I think you might really enjoy it, even if you're not someone who normally reads comic books. This isn't some complicated superhero comic that, requires in-depth knowledge of continuity. It's a self-contained fantasy adventure story published in a bunch of separate volumes, or you can buy the one-volume edition, which is the one I have, which reduces the sizes of the pages a little bit, but I think that with Smith's cartooning style, it's not really a disadvantage. The Bone one-volume edition is pretty good value for money. I bought mine a while ago, they're probably not $36 anymore, I don't know, but you get 1,300 pages of comics for your buck, and that's a pretty good deal. Anyway, the reason that I wanted to talk about Bone is that Bone is a story that does an amazing job of creating varied threats from a relatively limited palette of different monsters. I said this is a 1,300-page epic, and it's about these three cartoon kind of Walt Kelly's Pogo-like characters who wind up in this valley where strange doings are afoot. And together with a young girl and her cantankerous old grandma, you know, they start out solving local problems, and then this escalates and escalates and escalates until there's finally a big battle and the fate of the world is being decided and so on. And throughout this all, Smith manages to keep a relatively limited number of monsters in play, and he does this very, very effectively, allowing them each to be characterized much more than you would expect in a typical kind of fantasy campaign. We've talked before about how fantasy games with relatively limited monster pools start to feel a little bit repetitive, and I wanted to look at some of the ways in which Smith, in Bone, manages to avoid this. So there's one primary group of monstrous antagonists in Bone. Isn't a comic with a lot of stand-up fights, right? These are cartoon characters. This is very much an adventure story. There's a lot of daring escapes, last-minute rescues, that kind of thing. And indeed, there's a part in the middle where the grandma kills one of the monsters, and one of the Bones, the cartoon characters, is shocked and says, you know, you killed him? But then from that point on, it's a war story and people are dying left and right, including both bad guys and sympathetic characters. There's quite a lot of devastation, and it doesn't shy away from the human cost of war without being completely grim about it. So the main antagonist group are the rat creatures. You know, despite the name, these are not super rat-looking, and they fulfill the kind of like orc or bugbear or goblin role in this story, right? They're a big horde of kind of slightly rubbish, comical but also threatening antagonists. Now, the comical but also threatening part is really a result of, you know, Jeff Smith being one of the great cartoon storytellers, that he does such a wonderful job conveying a sense of menace while also making the rat creatures look kind of stupid. Indeed, one of the sort of like recurring lines of the early part of the story is stupid, stupid rat creatures. So there's a sense that they are kind of in the like bumbling henchman role, but because they're up against quite ordinary people, you know, who aren't wizards or fighters or anything like that, they're just kind of either lovable goofs, well-meaning naives, or scoundrels on the make, the threat level remains in play. And the rat creatures often appear just as kind of a horde or, you know, in squads like patrols. And Smith does an excellent job making them seem menacing. And here I think is where, as a DM, your role would be to kind of describe the monsters in a way that makes them seem threatening. And we're used to thinking of, say, a bugbear as, you know, either a lovable doofus or just a stat block full of numbers. But in reality, if this big bear, ape, cat, whatever it is looking fella was coming at you with his mace, it would actually be quite menacing. So something has to be done to make the bugbears seem like they'll crunch your bones. Now, over the course of the story, we also get kind of the perspective of the rat creatures, who are represented by first like a pair of kind of slightly incompetent rat creatures who are always, you know, chasing after the heroes and discovering plot points and not ever quite catching them and complaining about being hungry and arguing about what they're going to have for dinner and so forth. And at the end, they actually wind up having, you know, a sort of friendly, antagonistic relationship with the main characters. And they're not ever named or anything. But I feel like there is a sense where, if possible, you can characterize the recurring monsters, even if it's just a little bit, in such a way that not only does it provide the players with some kind of impetus to think about what the monsters are like and what they might do, but also it actually kind of helps give a sense of who they are and what they want. And in the case of the rat creatures, that sense is that they're just grunts. Grunts in an army. That army is led by another individualized rat creature who's kind of their boss monster form, and that's King Doc. King Doc is this gigantic rat creature with a giant bitey mouth, and he's portrayed as somewhere between their general and a ferocious monster who happens to kind of resemble them. No explanation for why King Doc is this gargantuan example of a rat creature. Sometimes he fights with a special war club, which again just seems to be a club, but he's the only rat creature who routinely uses weapons. And even his name, K-I-N-G-D-O-K, I think does a good job of making him feel special because, of course, it's a combination of the words king and doc, which are both kind of terms of respect and authority. So a bug boss would be an excellent thing to have among your bugbears for this campaign. But it can't all just be featureless goons. And as the story goes on, we get two more characters from within this group that the story's main characters can interact with. So in addition to King Duck, there's one more rat creature character, which is a sympathetic young rat creature named Bartleby. It's not really what he's called, it's just there's a running gag about Melville throughout the story for whatever reason. And the characters find him as like a young cub and they name him Bartleby, and he develops into a sympathetic like member of the party. So he's kind of the monstrous PC from the previous special. Finally, above King Doc in the hierarchy, we've got the twist villain, the one who's not a rat creature. And that is the Hooded One, a mysterious wizard who is manipulating King Doc. Not quite from behind the scenes, because the other rat creatures do seem to know who the Hooded One is. Or at least, I mean, they don't know the Hooded One's secret identity, which turns out to be relevant to the player characters, of course. And the Hooded One is an agent of an ancient evil, the Lord of Locusts, which is unable to physically manifest itself in the world and only works through the actions of the Hooded One. So this is a pretty straightforward monster setup. We've got a layer of rank-and-file grunt foot soldier monsters. We've got a couple of them who are individualized enough to make not constantly fighting the same guys repetitive. We've got a boss version that the characters can run away from at lower levels and then fight at higher levels. That does happen as the story progresses. Initially, you know, when the characters see King Doc, it's fleeing time. And King Doc kind of represents, like, his direct participation represents an escalation from the normal rat creature behavior. But then one of the characters actually faces him down and cuts his arm off. And then above that, we've got the Hooded One. And when the Hooded One finally turns up in person, stuff's about to get real. Outside of this central hierarchy, there are a small number of unique monsters. There isn't more than one monster category, or at least not one category that has more than one representative. So for example, we know that in this world there are dragons, and that the dragons actually play an important part in the plot, but only one, the Great Red Dragon, ever appears in the page. And contrary to what you'd expect, like, again, this is a very Smith-like thing to do, so you would think that, you know, the leader of the rat creatures would be a goof, like the lower-ranking rat creatures are goofs, but actually King Doc definitely gives off the vibe of, like, being a murderer. You know, there's a difference between a monster that's intimidating because it's a killer and a monster that's intimidating because it's a murderer. King Doc gives off the feeling of being a murderer. The Great Red Dragon, on the other hand, is a character who's sympathetic but kind of like enigmatic, prone to appearing and disappearing, you know, making cryptic utterances. Your sort of mentor character appears for the occasional early rescue, but then sort of fades out of the picture in a rescuing role later on. And then finally, there's the one monster who's not really connected to any of these other things, which is a giant lion that lives in the mountains that border the east of the valley where this all takes place. The lion's name is Rokuejaa, which he insists is pronounced Rokja with the R rolled, but everyone else just calls him Rockjaw. And Rokja acts as basically an independent player on this scene. Like, he at one point tries to capture the main characters to turn them over to King Doc in hopes of a promised reward, but at another point lets the characters kind of get past. There are also some bad guy humans, but they are presented as ordinary people who just, like, these are the people they're at war with. They don't have some evil plan to summon the Lord of Locusts. They're just on the other side of the war. I mean, and that sounds like there's not a lot going on, but of course the rest of the valley is just populated with people who are variously on the side of or opposed to the main characters. It's a simple, effective setup that really creates a complete setting. I don't think you would use this structure in a Dungeons & Dragons campaign to create something of this scale. I think if you were going to do an epic campaign in D&D, you would take a lot longer, and therefore you really would want a lot more variety in terms of monsters. But for a particular monster location, I really do think that rather than throw in the kitchen sink, you need one core monster that's really effective. Smith spends some time characterizing the rank and file rat creatures, not giving them distinctive personalities, but giving you a sense of what it is that rat creatures are like. Then he's got a couple of them as individualized people. He's got a boss version, King Doc, and he's got the mastermind behind everything, the hooded one. One of the things about the rat creatures that's really good is that Smith gives them a bit of a culture and a history without ever going into any great level of detail about it. So when we initially encounter the rat creatures, they're very much presented as this tribe of primitive barbarians, you know. They don't seem to have anywhere that they live. They just kind of, they all look the same. They don't wear clothes. They don't use tools. But they're somewhere on the line between people and monsters. And later on, we discover that their name for themselves, and indeed the name that the humans in the valley use for them, is Hairy Men. And we see what appears to be the ruins of one of their ancient temples. So, you know, we get the sense that they are a society and that kind of their society has been warped a little bit by the influence of the Hooded One, which I guess would go some way toward the problem of explaining, you know, why is there such a thing as a monstrous species? Why are all, you know, rat creatures bad and violent? And the answer would simply be, well, they're not. They're, you know, they're just like anybody else, but some influence has turned their society into this warlike one. And maybe that's why King Doc is such a freakish giant mutant as well, right? There's some magical influence of the Hooded One. It's also a good way to create conflict within the monster group. You know, whenever you're dealing with a monster group like bugbears or whatever, who are motivated by relatable, you know, human-like things like glory or plunder or politics or expansionism, you know, those are all motives that the player characters can attempt to understand and use to manipulate or befriend or satisfy these creatures. And there is some tension within the ranks of the rat creatures, you know, between those who kind of miss their quiet lives and those who are, like, wholly committed to the new regime. You get the sense they're kind of motivated largely by fear of King Doc. They don't really like him. And at one point, when the two comrades get in trouble for deserting their posts, initially they try to help the characters escape the rat things, but then they also, because they're worried they're going to get punished as well, but when they get the chance, they try to capture them and turn them in, hoping that a success will make King Doc less angry with them. So again, I think that that's the kind of thing that's often overlooked with, say, bugbears. Another thing that the rat creatures do that I think is really good in terms of applying it to D&D is that they have a tendency to hit and run. Rat creatures seem to have good mobility compared to the main characters, especially since the main characters are often kind of like traveling on their hay wagon or something like that. And so, you know, AD&D really covered this, but then I feel like in many games it doesn't apply, that monsters tend not to be as cowardly as they ought to be. It's the thing that Tucker's kobolds ought not to do, right? Which is stand their ground and fight to the death. This actually came up just last night. I was playing in a game of Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, and we were playing the classic D&D scenario, Night's Dark Terror. And at one point, we were defending a fortified farmhouse that's being attacked by a swarm of goblins. We were really getting worn down. We had badly injured people. We had people receiving medical attention and on their last wound. One of the important NPCs had been killed, and two of the characters were fighting desperate defenses of doors that the goblins had battered in. But at one point, one of the NPCs was on our side, charged out and got in amongst the goblin archers who were supporting this attack, and killed one or two of them, and they all just started to run away. And I feel like this is kind of what happens, right? Like, archers don't stick around once you have charged their line. They're not thinking like a player is thinking, like this is a war game where the goal is for them to win the scenario, and it doesn't matter if they personally die or not. So the rat creatures are a bit the same, you know, they do a kind of attempt an attack, and if it doesn't look like it was working out, they just back off, because they know that they can strike again if they need to. And what this means is that the rat creatures are a very effective tool to raise and lower the tension. What the rat creatures keep doing is making probing attacks into the valley and then moving back out, because they know that they're relatively safe in their base in the mountains, and that they can, you know, they can attack whenever they need to. They have the initiative, and so therefore they don't need to press any attack where they might be there long enough for reinforcements to arrive. So by having these kind of raiding parties and having the danger that that the main character's allies, like the Great Red Dragon, will turn up to help them, the DM can use the rat creatures to eat up PC resources, threaten the PCs, and force them to act like they're moving in dangerous country, but at the same time, not have every encounter with them turn into a knockdown, drag-out brawl. Half the time, if you just occupy a tactically superior position, if the bugbears see you taking cover amongst the rocks and leveling crossbows at them, maybe if they all rushed you in a body, they would probably get you, but nobody wants to be one of the bugbears who ends up bleeding out on the forest floor with a crossbow bolt or a magic missile in them, even if the bugbears win. If you're not playing for the fights, I think that there's something to be said for that kind of rock, paper, scissors strategic element where player characters can use their environment and use their situation to deter combat, still knowing that ultimately they're going to have to take the risk of going out into enemy country and exposing themselves to attacks from the bad guys. So yeah, that's Jeff Smith's Bone and what I think it can tell us about monsters in role-playing games. Bit of a tangent, but it did offer me an opportunity to reread Bone, and I'm very pleased about that, because it is superb and I had forgotten quite a lot of it. Anyway, this has been a special episode of Monster Man about whatever I happen to be thinking about at the moment, and in this instance, it was comic books. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you for supporting Monster Man on Patreon. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.